Today, justice was served. It's been a long time coming. It arrived when a convicted felon named William H. Cosby Jr. left the courtroom in handcuffs, headed off to state prison.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. And on Tuesday, Bill Cosby, once known to millions as America's dad, was sentenced to 3 to 10 years in state prison for drugging and sexually assaulting a woman in his home in 2004.
He was convicted of sexually assaulting one woman, Andrea Constand, even though we know that there are at least 60 others, probably hundreds more. But given the facts and the law that the judge had to work with, I think this was a fair sentence.
That's Lisa Bloom, an attorney with the Bloom Firm, representing Janice Dickinson, a former model and judge for America's Next Top Model. Dickinson alleges that Cosby drugged and raped her in 1982 at a hotel in Lake Tahoe, Nevada.
She doesn't want to do any interviews right now, but she wants people to know that she was never the same after Bill Cosby raped her. She says, "Therapy has helped me some, but it has not helped to restore my innocence."
Lisa there is reading from a part of a victim impact statement Janice Dickinson brought to the courtroom in Pennsylvania and had hoped to read. The judge did not allow her to do so, but yesterday Lisa told us that the sentence was a victory nonetheless.
Oh, this is a huge step forward for the Me Too movement, for victims. I mean, let's not lose sight of that. 3 years ago, I don't think there's really anyone who thought that Bill Cosby could be convicted of felony sex crimes and go to prison. I mean, this was unthinkable. Well, today the unthinkable became a reality.
Graham Boley was in the courtroom on Tuesday. He's an investigative reporter at the New York Times who's covered the Cosby case since 2014.
This had been a long journey to get there since Mr. Cosby's arrest in 2015. We'd been through many prosecution and defense fights, and then we'd had the trial and the conviction in April, of course. And so this was sort of the final moment. The drama was building. The courtroom was packed over the 2 days. Many other women who have accused Mr. Cosby of sexual assault were in the room, as they have been throughout the trial. They were very expectant. Mr. Cosby was there, Andrea Constand and her family. And then the judge gave a very impressive argument before he gave the sentencing. And when he did, Mr. Cosby didn't react. But then we saw him walk from the courthouse in handcuffs. And that was quite a moment, I must say.
You know, it took us forever. It feels like it took us forever to get here. This is the second trial after an earlier mistrial. Was there something different about this trial that finally resulted in a verdict?
I think there were two things, yeah. One, the second trial in April, Judge O'Neill allowed five other women to testify. And their testimony was very emotional and very jarring. And I think it had a big impact on the jury. Compared to the first trial, the mistrial, when there was only one woman who testified, didn't go so well. We were also in a new era, of course, we can't ignore. And that was represented in the courtroom by a psychologist who I thought was very impressive. And yesterday, the district attorney, when asked what was the difference, he said this person, Dr. Ziv. And she talked about the way in which people who suffer sexual assault behave and why they don't come forward for many months, sometimes years, why they behave in the way they do. And the defense had used Andrea Constand's behavior. She didn't come forward for a year. As a big kind of way to blame her and to attack her during the first trial. And this psychologist and the new era we're in meant that Andrea's behavior had far more credibility. I think those are the two big differences.
And of course, Bill Cosby was taken to prison yesterday. What is the appeal process from what you understand so far moving forward? Does he plan to?
They've said they're going to appeal. There are a number of appeal issues which are very clear. They've been signaling. They've been attacking the judge for the past few weeks and his integrity, saying he's biased. I think it's going to be one, maybe a couple of appeals there. The big one is the judge's decision to allow the five women in. That was a really kind of potent decision and pushed the envelope in legal terms. And it was quite rare. And they're going to say that was unfair.
Graham Boley is an investigative reporter at the New York Times who's covered the Cosby case since 2014. Graham, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
As Bill Cosby was being taken to prison, his spokesman Andrew Wyatt stood outside the courthouse in the pouring rain to deliver a statement to the media.
I believe and think it is important to point out that this has been the most racist and sexist trial in the history of the United States. Dr. Cosby has been one of the greatest civil rights leaders in the United States for over the last 50 years. What is going on in Washington today with Judge Kavanaugh is part of that sex war that Judge O'Neill, along with his wife, are a part of.
That's right. He called it a sex war. And I think that deserves a bigger conversation. So I've got Brittany Cooper on the line. She's a professor at Rutgers University, and she's also the author of Eloquent Rage, A Black Feminist Discovers Her Superpower. Brittany, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So a lot to unpack in this segment. Let's start with what was said in that quote here. We have Cosby spokesman once again saying, quote here, "This is the most racist and sexist trial in the history of the United States." Would love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, clearly that person doesn't understand how either racism or sexism work. What is sexist is that Bill Cosby was able, over the course of over 50 years, if we believe all of the allegations, to terrorize women, to sexually harass them as a matter of course, and then to violently sexually assault and rape dozens of victims and survivors. That is the epitome of sexism. We do not need to equivocate about that. I think that we can all concede, particularly for African Americans who are watching this and who are wondering if Harvey Weinstein will meet the same fate, or wondering how we have a president in the White House who is an admitted sexual assaulter, a Supreme Court nominee who I believe the allegations against. We are wondering whether these white men will be held to account. And I think that it's fine to say that our criminal justice system is racially inequitable, that it is often downright racist towards black people and towards black men. And yet none of that is an excuse or should excuse Cosby's terrible and terroristic behavior to all of these women he has encountered and harmed. And we don't need to use the racism of the system as an excuse to try to let Cosby off the hook for his bad behavior. And as a woman and as a black person, I am appalled at anybody who would seek to do that.
And Brittany, I think, you know, we've heard similar, this sort of reminds me of back in the 80s and 90s when we had this culture war fight. Now we're talking about sex wars here, and of course why it invoked Kavanaugh as well. And it sort of took me back to what we've all been talking about, the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill hearings, where Thomas himself said, you know, described his what he was going through as a, quote, high-tech lynching. And, you know, again, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this type, the race racial dynamics being played out here at these levels.
Absolutely. So that's essentially what this commenter was trying to invoke this spokesperson. He was trying to invoke the Clarence Thomas moment and essentially to play on black people's emotions and their connection to Bill Cosby's incredible body of artistic work that so many of us value and grew up on. He's trying to invoke that essentially to say what the conspiracy theorists have been saying, right? This is a conspiracy to take down the black man. And what becomes even more interesting is that now he's trying to put it in a broader context to say that this is this broader cultural conspiracy against men. No, the real conspiracy has been that men have out loud, hidden in plain sight, have terrorized women and have experienced no consequences from it. The question for us has to be not why is this happening to Bill Cosby, but rather how did Cosby and Trump and Kavanaugh, men who have done harmful things to women that by all accounts other people knew about, witnessed, saw, and helped in some ways to facilitate, how did these men, how were they allowed to get away with it so long? Why were they allowed to get away with it for so long? And how can we, a country who say that we believe certain things about justice, certain things about equal protection, that we allow men to rise to the heights of their careers, even though we know that they actively do violent forms of harm to women? And this is a unifying point between women across race and across class. The victims of Cosby's victims, many of them, the vast majority of them, were white women, many of them well-connected white women. That is true of Harvey Weinstein's victims, of his accusers, of many of the folks at the height of the Me Too movement. And it always causes me to say, if this kind of thing can happen to the most powerful women in our society, then what do you think is happening to women who are marginalized, don't have a voice, don't have access? And so these men are running scared. They are mad that they are being called to account, but it is their time. And I'm not going to be party to these arguments about the operations of race, because for my opinion, Cosby has become the worst racial stereotype of Black men. He did it through his actions. I think that he is an embarrassment to Black people, and he has had no racial loyalty to us. And so I don't understand why Black people or anybody else is going hard in the paint for him. He does not deserve it.
Well, let's talk about that other that as well, because Bill Cosby has been, before this was not just considered America's dad in many ways, but, you know, Jell-O pudding pops, et cetera, but he was also somebody who talked a lot about respectability politics, pull up your pants, don't go to prison. And it was really frustrating, I think, to a lot of folks in the Black community to hear that message over and over. Where does that fit into what we're seeing, into the narrative of Bill Cosby today, that whole idea of respectability politics?
Absolutely. So in 2004, Bill Cosby gave what is known as the infamous pound cake speech at Howard University, where he essentially said that, you know, it tells an anecdote about a Black man who gets shot after stealing a piece of pound cake. And he is less appalled at the fact that this man is shot in the head and more appalled at the notion that he steals the pound cake. And then he says things like, you know, poor people are not upholding their end of the bargain. And so he used his incredible amount of fame and respect in Black communities to actively, explicitly shame the Black poor, to shame Black folks for their sexual practices, talking about why are you having all of these children you're not taking care of. Meanwhile, he fathered children outside of his marriage. He never lived up to the standard, but he moralized and preached to Black people for the last two decades in this century about our behavior. And it turns out that he was the worst predator of them all, that he was the worst man of them all, that if it was the difference between JoJo on the corner minding his business and Bill Cosby, Bill Cosby is the man that you should have kept your daughter away from. And this is the problem with respectability politics, is that it assumes that people's economic status is some indicator of their moral prerogatives. And that is completely absurd. And so even though it is devastating to see a cultural icon turn out to be a predator, that's what I'm sad about. I'm not sad that he went to jail. I'm not sad that he has been dethroned. I am sad about the man that he is, and I am sad that this man was allowed to victimize women and that people knew about it and nobody did anything about it. And what I hope in this moment, what I hope is that he is the canary in the coal mine and that other men are going to have their day in court and their moment of reckoning. And so I hope that this is not limited to only, that justice is not going to be limited in this case only to Black men, but that all men who have done harm will have to account for their crimes.
Brittany Cooper is a professor at Rutgers University. Brittany, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.